Welcome to a podcast of impossible things. Today we're looking at day 5 of Torchwood, Children of Earth. We'll be summing up our thoughts on the series as a whole. Have we been won over by Torchwood's latest incarnation? Most importantly, has Swithin? Swithin! Have you?
Have I? Yes.
Wow.
Really?
Tortured. for the benefit of those who might not have caught our side swipes and jibes at Tortured in the past, how would you sum up your view of it before now?
Well, if you listen to the last podcast, I introduced it as the worst series since El Dorado. Never actually seen El Dorado, just know his reputation of being an absolute pile. Which is basically my opinion of Tortured was. I saw the first few episodes of the first season and thought, this is shocking in the extreme. Shocking not in a good way of shocking, like, ooh, this is bold and new, but just being really, really rubbish. And that was my general impression of it. I heard it got slightly better. I kind of looked at it a little bit, didn't seem to have got much beyond Hellfire and Brimstone. So avoided it. And then, you know, because we were doing this podcast on it, otherwise I wouldn't have watched the event week. I was like, okay, well, we'll see what it is. So I saw the first two episodes, the podcast the first one, I thought, kind of okay. Third and fourth, really, really good. Final episode, alright, we'll get to that later. But I would, if there's a fourth season of Torchwood, I would actually watch it. Which I would not have said before this week.
Incredible times. It seems to really have set the internet and public life afire. As an event, it's gone very well for the BBC. I don't know the exact figures, but they've been high.
The ratings actually went up midweek. Most times,
that's very good.
Most times these serials just trail off just because people miss an episode and don't bother to catch up, but it seems to have had really good word of mouth, it's had really good audience appreciation and just reviews, and it is quite a common theme across lots of different websites and blogs and newspapers. This is Torchwood. Only good, only much better than it has been before. I mean,
it felt like a real show rather than
I mean, Tortured has had its fans before now, but has always had its detractors in quite equal measure as well. But this seems to have really, people really seem to have taken to Children of Earth in a way that hasn't generally been the case, in the way that it's been universally liked, in the way that you can't say that Tortured Series 1 and 2 were.
Definitely. What were your opinions on it, Caleb?
Yeah, I thought it was a much stronger story. I think just having the five-part format, that works well, and it does sidestep the whole issue of, well, why are aliens threatening Cardiff every week for 13 weeks type thing, which they try and get round with the Hellmouth-like rift in time and space, but it does seem a little bit hokey or can-do. And I think it has really the quality of the writing, just getting Russell T Davies back on board, it has been that much better and has had a bolder, more interesting story to tell. And just the overall consistency of the thing over the week has been, I think the ending, I've got, we'll come to the ending commentary, but I've got some slight reservations about that, but I think it was very strong. It did raise some really provocative it had some really provocative scenes and ideas and twists and turns, and I really think it did work well.
It felt more like what they originally billed Torchwood as an adult Doctor Who, an adult sci-fi show that would raise those questions. It feels like maybe this has come a few years too late for Torchwood, because certainly by the end you can't really see where Torchwood can go from here to make it the same programme, and they do very much take it a step away from the Torchwood that we've known. They get rid of the hub, they get rid of the pterodactyl, they get rid of the weebles. There's no mention of any of these things at all. It really seems like either they're breaking all of the old toys in a bid to move on, or they're just breaking the whole programme. And I'm not sure if anything is going to happen, whether it's just Russell T Davies throwing his toys out of his pram.
And that has upset some of the fans.
Yes.
There has been quite...
myself included.
Quite a backlash, particularly. We'll warn you now, we take it, if you're listening to this, that you have seen it, and we won't be holding back on the spoilers, but particularly the death of Yanto Jones in the penultimate episode, one of the regular characters, and there was James Moran, the writer of the co-writer of the third episode, got quite a lot of rather angry tweets on Twitter from angry fans, and there's been a bit of a kerfuffle about just the backlash there, some rather ill-advised and words directed towards the writers from certain quarters, although far more people being polite and appreciative, if somewhat shocked, that it has, you have got something of a feeling from the fans that it has, perhaps it is moving rather too far away from the show that they loved from the first and second series.
Yeah, I spent the week watching it away from Cardiff, which is why I wasn't involved in the first podcast that we did. But I spent much of it while I was watching this in contact with Beth, who we at Impossible Contact have done some stuff with before. But something that really came up for us was the fact that now, with the loss of Tosh and Owen last season, and now Yanto, we felt that we were being left with the characters that we disliked the most in Gwen and Jack. Jack now seemingly is also out of it, which is part of why I'm not sure if it can continue with just pregnant Gwen.
I think Jack's just made
a temporary disappearance.
Disappearance to be in the finale of Doctor Who, finale.
That may well be it.
It wouldn't surprise me if he, if they do do
reappeared,
it. If he resolves his issues in Doctor Who. He's comes in and he's a bit world weary, but
I have to say though that the final episode did win me over to a Yanto-less Torchwood. I felt that Gwen, and in particular Gwen and Rhys, held it together very well. That Jack, as a darker figure, going back more to his roots, something that we'll touch on later in the podcast, worked better than the cuddly, friendly, I just want to have sex with everything Jack that has been around for so much of Torchwood. All in all, I absolutely loved it. I thought it really did make Torchwood the kind of programme that it should have been all along. And it's the kind of programme that I think the fans have been seeing glimpses of throughout the two seasons beforehand. And it's nice now that those of us who've been through the wilderness years of things like Cyberwoman, and the one where Owen danced with death, can finally go, yeah, we were there at the beginning. We remember the good old days.
Before Torchwood was
born. Yeah, exactly. When, you'd have an episode that hinged on whether the pterodactyl could kill the monster of the week, or if anyone was going to watch at all. But yeah, it's brilliant. It's really exciting. If, you know, it comes around again for Torchwood season 4 next year. Brilliant. Let's hope that they just bring up the sleeper agent storyline that they did try and slot in there. But I think that that is a really good point to jump into.
Yes, let's get going.
Yeah, so if you've got your iPlayer, or you've got a video of it, or whatever it is that you guys do, now is the time to press your play button, because now is the time that we will be starting our own podcasting of the episode.
We are already here. One point on that is, welcoming may be great, but welcoming tomorrow is rubbish. I don't know how they could get themselves out of it, but saying we are coming tomorrow is useless.
I don't see what the problem is
it
with them saying.
Ring properly. It's like, we are coming again. Works better. You just great with the flow of the line.
I disagree. I think it makes it slightly more sinister to have tomorrow. Here we are. So here's the catch up. Oh, there he goes. There goes lots and lots of people. High death rate, really, for, you know.
I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Are they not until that point? Not until
episode 4. But
on the answer dying, I was seriously impressed because I didn't expect them to do it. Anything like that.
Yeah. Not sure why this footage is quite so
Blair Witch.
Yeah. If they were just filming it as normal, I don't think it'd be quite this disjointed. And he's edited it very well to
Reese is amazing.
Reese is like a trained cameraman, isn't he? He's got the full-on editing suite, and he's in multiple places at once to get that footage.
It's definitely on a Mac, not PC.
Yeah.
But Reese, I was quite impressed by Reese.
Reese is a star. Reese and Johnny should have their own spin-off show.
I think it's interesting here, the whole, it's almost like the problem of evil with Christian theology. If God is good, then why is there evil and suffering in the world? And here we've got, if the Doctor is good, why doesn't he save the world? And
it's nice that they've addressed that, though, because you do always feel with Torchwood that, you know, if it comes to a really terrible thing, they ought to
bring the big man in.
Yeah, exactly.
You do wonder why Martha Jones doesn't ring him up. Too busy enjoying
her
honeymoon.
Yeah.
She's only kids, yes, it's not a problem.
But this is one of the problems with having the magic mobile phones, is that it raises too many of these type of questions.
In fairness, if they've lost all their mobile phones and everything, they might not want her ringing. They might just be saying no to her every time she rings them.
No.
It's what I'd be doing in this situation.
No.
And by this point, because we've got Yanto's family with the kids and so on, their role in the drama really becomes clear, because we know that they're on this estate. They're some of the ones targeted as being at the bottom of the league tables, and their role in the drama really becomes clear. And that was a really good scene in episode 4, just the cabinet meeting.
Oh, it was fantastic. Really, really well done. Cynicism. This lady in particular was fantastic.
Who is Claire? Just look exactly like Claire Short.
Yeah.
No, school league tables can't determine who the bottom 10% intelligence are in schools. I mean, what are the league tables?
So funny. I did find it. It was quite chilling. Just the logic of it.
Yeah,
taking the modern political. It did feel very New Labour.
Yeah.
A sort of evil, twisted version of New Labour.
Later on in this episode, when they say all those kids that hang around on the streets, well, they'll be gone. And you kind of think, well, that would be a good thing. But, no, they're winning me over.
The uni diary isn't doing anything, does he?
No.
He just looks.
Although it's good to see that there is serious affirmative action in play in units. This is How many of the unit commanders now have been black guys or black women? The majority of the ones that we seem to have seen in Doctor Who. It's like, this is the only role that Doctor Who seems to put in.
And you've got Decker, who's survived, and he's quite
weird.
Yeah, Swithin and I were discussing this earlier, that he seems to be a lot more evil, and they at times play him to be almost...
like an alien agent.
Yeah. And we, both of us, were very much expecting there to be some kind of reveal about his true motives in all this, and there isn't.
I think he's just the cynical, and he may have been around in 1965 and thought this is a really bad idea, and
yeah,
it's just now cynically going.
There's the scene where he breathes on the big booth in the third episode.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like, what are you doing?
But it is like one of those, there's a lot of sci-fi and war films sort of have this guy probably served in the war, sort of got his own crazy projects going on.
I suppose, but I don't think this fleshed out to obvious, make him as obvious as that.
It's interesting, why couldn't the 4, 5, 6 just take the children?
Anyway, why did they...
Now, this is the big reveal of the motives of the 4, 5, 6, which, as motives go, is fantastic, as far as I'm concerned.
I just found it a bit weird. I was like, okay, and so? The whole children as drugs thing, it seemed odd, it seemed random, I wasn't sure what the point was.
I mean, it does make it sound really sinister.
Yeah.
Which is nice, but then there's the obvious point is, what is it about children? It's so disassociated from normal motivation that it does, I think, need slightly more fleshing out for that, and why you can't just take adults.
That, I think, for me, was probably the best line. You're snorting our children. Fantastic! Great! But it does raise the question of how exactly did they decide that they would make good drugs? Like, did they just come along to Earth and think, hey, there's some small aliens here, let's shoot them up and see what happens?
Well, they'd probably go in line as, oh, we've used this chemical, we've found by our technology that there's most prevalent and the highest intensity in prepubescent earthlings, and therefore came down to snort them. That's probably the reason.
I think that that's a bit daft. You'd think that with all their technology, they'd be at least able to, you know...
synthesize
it. Yeah, exactly.
It's not the real thing, though, is it? Maybe they like organic drugs.
Also, the fact that a junkie would destroy its supply. You know, their threat that they're going to destroy everyone on Earth. Instead of just taking, by force, 100% of the population of Earth, or destroying, you know, a large proportion of Earth, and then telling everyone else to give up.
I think one of the things that made the drama seem slightly less satisfying for me than it could do was just that its central dilemmas rested on seemingly arbitrary decisions about what the aliens could and couldn't do, and it didn't seem to be some kind of controlling logic where you felt, oh, it had to be this way. It just seemed to come out of, for reasons of plot, the aliens have these abilities.
Well, I felt like that with the 1965 stuff. I mean, you give the logic for the present day, but the logic of 65 was utterly arbitrary. Well, why do you get it in the first place? Why Scotland? Why England? They're asking, you know, why is it the UK? Well, they've dealt with them before, but it doesn't explain why we dealt with them in the first place.
Hmm. Well, because they were going to give us the cure to the...
Yeah, but why is that necessarily Britain?
Well, maybe they just landed somewhere randomly.
Well, I suppose so, but then the way the technology works...
Why would they land somewhere else? Like, there's no real reason they've got to land somewhere.
And why shouldn't it be the Britain or the home counties or
exactly.
Cardiff?
Should be the home counties.
At
this point, Torchwood capitulates, essentially, and goes back to its default state for this series, which is not doing anything whatsoever to
yeah, their shining moment was at the end of the last episode where they go in, no, we're not going to hand over any of the kids. We're declaring war. We stand together.
Yeah, I'm gonna raise up an army.
And then the aliens go, okay then,
and they go, oh no, we didn't really mean it. Oh, but no, you're killing everyone. Oh,
and you'd think that, it's just Jack. If you declare war on some aliens, then you shouldn't be surprised that they fight back.
Yeah. Has he not seen Independence Day? What I particularly enjoyed about it was that they built a cage, or, you know, a chamber for the aliens, which included for them some way to release a poison into the surrounding building. Now, when you were building that whole chamber, would you not think, oh, there's like a poison release thing here? Maybe it wouldn't be a good idea to build that in? Maybe we should just, you know, build some safeguards or something against exactly that kind of thing.
But on the design of the cage, I thought that was really, really good.
Yeah.
I think the standard idea that the best episode is episode 3, which I think stands up fantastically, the build-up and tension, then they actually hearing. And then the dialogue sequence with John Frobisher interviewing them for the first time in the press conference.
Yeah.
Brilliantly directed by Aris Lynn. He's going to be given a lot of credit for
Aris Lynn has done a great job.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to see what he does on David Tennant's final story.
I would say that, though, I do think that the ending of this and the ending of the previous episode is drawn out too long, but I think that's more reasons of scripts rather than Aris Lynn's direction, to be fair, because it'd be written for an hour and it would be shot for less than an hour.
We've heard a lot of criticism about Jack's daughter, who seems to have a perpetual smile on her. And, I mean, this is meant to be shock, and yet her facial expression is very similar to her general facial expression. I don't know, I'm not sure if it's just a little bit of cynicism, but she does seem to be the weakest of the...
And it's not a child.
Yeah. Who was it?
We reckon it was a
Toplophane. We reckon it was the blinking head from the Toplophane.
One of our friends was saying that she thought it might have been more effective if it had been more more still human, might have been more horrific than just the whole mask, which dehumanised it to some extent. Oh, here's John Frobisher coming to see the Prime Minister.
And this is the most sinister scene.
Just the sheer cynicism.
It was just gut-wrenching to watch.
And I think John Frobisher, you have to give just so much credit.
Probably the best actor in
the final. Yeah, that he manages to make John Frobisher seem sympathetic and that you do feel sorry for him. In the hands of a lesser actor, it would be utterly unsympathetic. But, the Prime Minister's a right nasty piece of work.
Yeah.
But the thing is, his political logic is perfect. It's like we've lost.
But he's totally inhuman.
Oh, yeah.
And I think one of the things that you can say about this is that it does present the worst side of humanity. It presents the the inhumanity of people really well.
I think it's interesting that Russell T. Davies said in advance that he wanted to show how civilization could snap, that we like to think that, oh, we're civilized, that we in Britain, in the West, we're all sorted out. Those things that happen off in Africa and places, oh, it couldn't happen here type thing. But to show the, give lie to that.
I think that that is an interesting idea. I'm not sure if he succeeded
in
that.
No, I don't.
I think that there's a huge difference between something like Africa, where it's poverty and corruption, to an alien race that turns up and demands 10% of your children, and then you're obviously very evil already, PM, decides that giving up that 10% of children is a good idea.
Yes. I think another way in which he didn't succeed is that it's, while the politicians are shown to be corrupt and self-serving, most of the ordinary people that
yes.
we see are nobles, sort of the earth, protect their children type thing. And it is implied that you've got all these middle-class people who aren't doing anything to protest against all the working class kids being carted off. But we don't get to see that. We don't get to see the ordinary person,
like letting it happen.
And, and so it just, I don't think it does enough to differentiate it from the whole idea of, oh, aren't politicians corrupt corrupt and venal, which is a very lazy, obvious thing to say. It's not, it's not interesting or brave as an observation.
No. Particularly considering that Russell T. Davies does have a track record of this kind of observation against politicians. He's never been...
World War III.
Yeah. He's never been particularly fond of politicians as a group of people.
I mean, it's interesting when you put it across. It seems to be kind of a quasi-Marxist class.
Yes, there is a strong class.
Class elements like the working class are good... and things. Although I did like the scene later on when we get the blokes from Ely Estate.
Wonderful. Absolutely
so
brilliant.
It's like, yeah, get that out of them.
Johnny has been a standout character.
Johnny, brilliant.
I mean, the whole of the Yanto stuff where his sister was asking why is he bringing these problems to our door, and Johnny says, you know, we're the only family he's got. That was just wonderful. From a character who could so easily have become... Again, very stereotypical in the same way that the Prime Minister is of this kind of working class thug, and, you know, the chav of the storyline. They gave him real humanity, real heart, and that is the real kind of strange thing about this. You get the total one-note characters like the PM, and then you get the secretary here who has some wonderful character moments in this. You get Johnny, who was brilliant. PC Andy, what a star.
He's both brilliant.
Yeah.
Quick question. Did everybody... we just had the Requisition 31, where he gets the gun. Did we all expect it was some kind of suicide thing?
Yes.
I didn't think it was going to be a gun. I thought it would be some kind of suicide pact. I didn't expect to see...
I wasn't sure if it was going to be something to free Torchwood. Some kind of a requisition to, like, kind of get them released or something. But I think that by this point, Torchwood is totally...
He's capitulated.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got that sense of foreboding. It's like, he's going to dob himself.
Here we've got, it's interesting, the whole issue of abortion that's raised here in relation to the whole themes of children, sacrificing your children, and so on. And here, Gwen raising the possibility of getting abortion and Rees being against it. And that is a massive issue. We claim to be, we don't want to kill our children, yet you've got these millions of unborn babies that are terminated, and it's how much do we really value every life type idea.
I don't really think it was playing that heavily on it. I think this was more making the point of, do we want our children to live in a world which would be left by...
I agree.
Yes.
Rather than abortions, I think it was more of a link into what would be left afterwards, rather than...
Yes, yes.
I can see that this link.
Those were more my thoughts on it, rather than that they were getting at.
Yeah.
I'd agree that was what they were going for.
Here we see Frobisher arriving at home.
I think just the way you've got Bridget Spears here and her talking about John Frobisher to Lois, intercut with him going to kill himself and his family, it does work very well. It's very dramatic, and just not giving easy answers or a simplistic view of the character. You have her view of him and his actions, and you are left to draw your own conclusions.
Do you think it was implicated he had an affair with her at one point?
I think there's the hint that
she loved him. I'm not sure if there's an implication there.
No, it's just that because Lois had said, you know, he wanted her by his side, you're not the first.
Yes, and in that
seems
case...
Seems to imply that may have been a relief.
I think it is nicely underplayed.
It seems to be... It leaves it
open. Personally, I'd say that she liked him and he wasn't...
That interested.
Yeah, and that she's more bitter because there were other people that he went for rather than her.
So do you reckon he did go for them, or is it something she read?
No, I think that he probably did. He kept working. But this is just really lovely. That it really does humanise two characters who, up to this point, had been quite cold. What do you think about Lois as the series has gone on?
I think she's equipped herself quite well. I mean, she's very much of a standard character in this. The newbie figuring out what she signed up for was terribly evil.
Yeah.
And working against it. But I thought the way the character's woven in was perfectly believable because, you know, plays on the aspect of you don't really know, you don't really ask questions. And then John So, tied up with what he's doing, just doesn't really notice she's there, which I think is perfectly plausible.
Yeah.
But I think she put herself pretty well with what she has, really. I can see herself tortured coming back as being a resident member.
Oh, yes, definitely.
I think the scenes with her when she gets up and confronts the Prime Minister and the Cabinet, that is a really good scene. And to get really good merit for her character.
Although I think of scene of the series, it's going to be this. Oh, sorry, I preempted it slightly. Just very little sound effects with the choir in the background, with a monologue over the top.
Personally, scene of the series, I think, is that you want to snort our kids, which I just absolutely love.
For me, the standout scene would be the Cobra meeting where they decide.
That's very good.
I just love the tension. You know it's coming.
Yeah.
You see them playing, you see his wife on the bed, but you don't know when the gunshots are going to appear.
Yeah.
So it's like, wait, we know it's coming. When?
It's just, what is he telling them in there?
And it's real loud as well, with the gunfire. I think it was fantastically. I liked it. Plus the fact, along with killing Yanto, the show had balls. And I like balls.
Good to know, Sid. Yeah. Good to know.
But it's like, it's not shying away from killing your main cast member and killing your own kids.
Yeah.
I'm not saying this is obviously a great thing to do all the time, but
Torchwood is very good, actually, at killing off its own members, and that's something that I really admire about it, that it doesn't lie about the fact that Torchwood is a has a very short life expectancy, that now you've come to the end of the third season, and of the five original characters when Gwen joined, one died in the first episode, two died at the end of season one died in the third season, and one of them has died pretty much every single episode but come back to life. It's brilliant. Whereas a lot of series that would say, you know, oh, this is the hardest job on earth, no one can survive this,
and then, you know,
yeah, exactly. It's brilliant.
Because you can always expect the people who don't have very much to say die, because that's what always happens. But having the main
and it's very easy to fall into a rut if you keep the same characters. And I like the differing dynamic this time without Tosh and Owen. I still miss Tosh and Owen, but
I like the idea of them taking all the kids into this house and paying to upkeep while I'm not away from school.
Yeah.
Look, the kids are playing, and Johnny's playing on the 360. Yeah.
Here we see Jack asking Gwen to save the children. And oh no, it's go time!
Go. We don't give the orders, Mr. Green. Now, this I found a bit annoying, is why does the Prime Minister let the American guy run over the top of him for no apparent reason? The UN, what does the UN do? Not very much apart from push paper. If you're such a cynical guy and wants to run the show, there's no reason why he should allow the American commander to take control of it.
And also, another implausible thing is that we'd have the military manpower to carry out an operation of this size. It's the drop of a hat.
I thought most of our troops were abroad.
It's quite impressive, really.
What would be more...
I love this. This was absolutely horrible. As, you know, as someone who next year will be doing teacher training, like, when she's saying you don't have the authority and their teachers are backing her up, that was just absolutely so upsetting. Why are the parents here at this point? Why are the parents just hanging around at the gates?
Midday? Half day? No. They're too old for half days, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, I guess if you were nearby and saw army trucks turning up, you might be a bit concerned.
I guess.
What would be more plausible would be to have some of the specialist police to do it instead, or in conjunction with the military. Because you have the police these days are a lot more militaristic than they used to be in their training and their general guard. They go very much more towards the military end.
Bloody pigs! Fascist filth! Is that where we're going, is it? Maybe.
A resident anarchist.
This is Swithin Dobson, who thinks that you shouldn't tax the roads. Everyone should maintain their own section.
So
here we are, and Gwen's telling her they think that they're coming for the kids.
And trying to convince his sister.
Oh dear.
Yeah. Shut down.
This is funny.
It's strange, isn't it? She's got that weird smile.
Lisa. Any situation.
Yeah.
A little smile.
Yeah. Did you begin to get the feeling just with Jack's grandson hanging around here? Something's going to happen to him at all?
I didn't actually. I never get foreshadowing at all.
I predicted a lot of the children. I don't know, I kind of thought about it a little bit more. I didn't really register that, but in retrospect, it obviously makes a lot of sense.
This is also brilliant that they worked out at this point which children were at school and the home addresses of those who weren't, and are able to swoop in.
Yeah, I was thinking that if you were planning this, you wouldn't want to just get the 10% you need in. You'd get the 15 or 20%
yeah.
in it, just to make sure, because you'd know that there'd be a reasonable percentage that wouldn't turn up, and you'd think that they'd come up with a better way of doing that. But then you might start eating into the people who aren't in the bottom 10% of chavs.
Yeah.
you might start getting a few middle-class people, and we couldn't have that.
No. Well, I did think in the last episode the rationale for taking the kids made a lot more sense. It's like, choose a random one. That doesn't make any sense. Well, but first, except everyone's kids around this table, and grandkids, that's fine. And then we'll go from there.
What do you think of the turning around of the this hit woman's?
Not unexpected.
Thing? No.
I thought there'd be slightly more, you know, of a paramilitary force, though. I thought they might actually go in and, you know, as I've been expecting Torchwood to do, to actually try and do something action-y. You know, when they started shooting at the 4-5-6, I was thinking, yes, finally!
Violence.
They decided to just kill the thing rather than complaining about it. I mean, I thought these guys might have had some kind of secret weapon. I mean, what's happened to all of the Torchwood tech that...
You got these taken away when the Ely kids nicked the car.
Yeah.
I think one of the interesting things is that Jack's daughter basically sets in motion the events that lead to her grandson's death by talking her out to doing something and getting Jack on board.
Is left in jail to rot.
At this point, I'd like to commend... What's the guy that did the music?
Ben Foster, I think.
Ben Foster, that's it. Not the Manchester United goalkeeper. I think he's done a very, very good job on the whole with the music for this series.
Yeah.
I think the cinematic stuff has worked pretty well, because basically what it is...
Poor PC Andy is still trying to...
he's such a nice guy.
To get back. He is. He's really, really nice. He's so badly treated by Torchwood generally.
I can see him getting a cult female following.
Okay.
He's a nice
guy.
Yeah. Here we go. I do think it's interesting. It does play on paranoia of the nanny state. And so on, just the government coming to take your kids.
Yeah. Because that's been a few more recentish cases.
Yeah, this is lovely from Johnny that he rallies
the local blokes.
Yeah. Which is what would happen. Like, this is what I was waiting for, the mob scenes where...
You could definitely see this happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The blokes are getting around any of this. I loved it how they did in the first one, where they distracted the people who were watching the house to get his wife off to see Yanto.
Yeah.
This is brilliant.
Yeah.
Vigilante.
Yeah. Although at this point I was so worried that the army was just going to gun them all down. Which is what you think the army would do. You know, that they'd have orders that in this situation they should just shoot to kill.
Mm.
Like, I was really, really just expecting them to, like, just to pull out guns and just shoot all of them.
I just love this bit.
This is brilliant from BC Andy.
But
takes off his staff jacket. Lovely. Obviously thinks, you know, all these men, they haven't got armour or anything.
It's not a whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, wait, I go naked into battle.
And then, takes off his tie as well.
Isn't it
punches a guy on the helmet.
What a man!
Yeah.
But I just looked this bit, I'm just like, yes, just beat the hell out of the military.
Yeah.
So much.
Yeah. Stick it to the man.
Yeah.
Really? He was like, yeah, do it.
It's like there's a sliding scale of hatred in this. There's the politicians that you should really hate. Then there's the army who, you know, are just following orders and have a reason for doing it, but still evil. Then there's the police who come to your aid against the army, but aren't really that effective.
And then you've got people who should ride around the blokes of Ealing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the good honest working class.
Who licks Torchwood's wheels. Gwen looks like she could be a good school teacher at this moment.
Yeah.
She's very happy.
Yeah, Decca is an unpleasant piece of work.
He is. He reminds me a little bit of Walter McKay.
And she's really just happy to leave her child with anyone, isn't she?
That's quite a cool shot, just with the reflections and.
Yeah.
Eros has been quite good with those, even in the Doctor Who stuff these days. I tell you what, I've noticed why this isn't really very Doctor Who-ish. There is no pink lighting. I just noticed it's green, it's not pink!
I've
analysed those transmissions for 40 years and
never broken.
Brilliant!
Shut up.
I think she should be in Torchwood.
Mm.
It can be the all-female new Torchwood. Gwen, her, and Lois Abiba.
The new Charlie's Angels.
Yeah.
With Jack sending them on missions.
Yeah.
You can just pop in.
Yeah.
No, that's Jack as the face of Bells. I want to make Jack as the face of
Bells. I wasn't actually sure. When they blew him up, I was thinking, are they just going to leave his head? And is this going to be the explanation that his head, like, got blown off, but is still alive? And that they stuck it in, like, a case and it was just going to be his head talking to them? It would have been brilliant. Like, Gwen just has to carry his head around.
There's in Celtic mythology, there's the head of Bendigeidfran, this ancient Welsh king, who in the story of Blodeuwedd is has his head chopped off, but it survives and it's buried in London, and if it's dug up, then disaster will befall the country or something. Okay. It would be quite fun if they could somehow tie that into Jack's history, how he becomes the face of both.
He becomes
this
Sandman,
ancient...
The Sandman thing of Orpheus that, you know, his head's just left there watching the sunrise and sunset every day on a Greek island, and it's because he lost all the people that he loved and everything.
Mm. But yeah, there's a lot of mythological stuff you can...
Yeah.
Now, this brings up... We're getting towards where Jack sacrifices his own grandchild. We're not quite here yet. It's Gwen's message being recorded. And it doesn't seem quite so gloomy now. There's some sunlight and stuff.
No.
But yeah, it's interesting, the whole idea of the one dying to save the many, and that's a theme perhaps we can discuss what they're doing with that in a moment. But, the doctor looks away in shame.
She's got better as an actress. She doesn't just use her eyes anymore. Which is nice to see, because she had a huge tendency to just, like, kind of widen her eyes any time anything happened. Like, it didn't matter what. It could be joy, surprise, excitement, sadness. The eyes would be going.
My acting's good, though. Sorry,
it is, but it is, but only when you use other things as well.
Yeah.
She'd sometimes look like she was paralysed
and the only thing she had to act with were her eyes.
Wasn't she paralysed in one episode?
Was probably.
Series 2, episode 1? Was she paralysed in that?
It sounds like the kind of thing that would have happened. The only one I can really remember is the one where she was pregnant. And she wasn't paralysed for that.
It would be an unfortunate combination.
Yeah.
Pregnancy and paralysis.
The only thing I can think of with paralysis is the Buffy episode where Willow is paralysed by a demon that's eating her skin.
I think just keeping the 4, 5, 6 in hidden in the smoke works really well, because it would just destroy the sense of menace to get a proper look at it.
Yes.
Definitely
was changed earlier. It's like, I really liked it in episode 3 when it came down, and you just saw what they did and threw up and blood flowing against it. It's like, what is this? This is really cool. Don't show me, because it will be rubbish.
Apparently the back of the DVD box has a picture of it without the smoke, and it's very disappointing.
But it's so difficult to actually, when you build something up so much, you can never show it properly and be actually very satisfying.
Mm. And Stephen Moffat was saying something about this, and this is the genius of the Weeping Angels, is that they're always about to arrive, and Doctor Who monsters are always scary up to the moment they arrive.
And then we go.
And
as most monsters are.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeepers Creepers is a classic case in point of a movie which was fantastic until the very moment that you saw the monster, at which point you went, wow, what a terrible movie.
And it's like, because Dalek's really scary until they actually meet the Doctor, and then it's, exterminate, we are going to exterminate you, but we're not yet.
You will be exterminated, Doctor, the one who we will now exterminate.
I just love Laura's mind ripping that alien bodies, bringing the crotons and such Daleks in. It's so brilliant.
Here we get them working out a way to get at the 4, 5, 6. But it does seem to come a bit out of nowhere.
Yeah.
They just realise, oh, we'll do this. It seems like in Doctor Who, the Doctor will work something out. It works first time. And surely over 5 episodes, you'd have more time to try some things and fail and test something out and just build it up and set something up in a bit more of a satisfying way.
It would have been nicer if that had been what Decker was for, that they'd seized him and he'd gone, well, of course I've known how to defeat them all along, but just no one would listen to me. You just need to use a child. Oh, we've conveniently got one.
Yeah, because it just seems everyone's kind of capitulates.
Yeah.
And then somehow Jack pulls a rabbit out of proverbial hat.
Yeah.
It just seems slightly, and there's a little smirk again, and
It is interesting just that you have the whole, oh, we won't give up one child, that's what exactly.
That's interesting. It reminded me somewhat, in the way it's actually done, when they do sacrifice to try the end, to some extent of the finish audio 4, 5 and 5, in that, you know, we won't sacrifice loads of people, but then they actually do. You know, if it's a great good, you actually kill somebody.
Well, I thought it was an interesting echo of the scene with Donna in the Circle of Mirrors, so one person surrounded by light going to die.
Yes.
But with Donna, you have the whole Doctor Who thing of, in giving her life, she saves her life and the life of the entire timeline and so on. So there's the whole resurrection type thing. But this is very much sacrifice without any of that willing sacrifice, without any of the
AI.
You don't get any resurrection or comeback. It's just brutal. They don't try and get the boys' consent in any way. Say, they just stick him in the middle and watch him fry, and that does make for very uncomfortable viewing. But this whole every human culture going back to earliest human history does seem to have this idea of sacrifice, of killing someone in the place to placate the gods or whatever. It does seem to be something deeply embedded in our culture and psyche to some extent as human beings, and that comes up in many, many stories. There's some French dude, René Girard, who has sort of studied this and tried to analyse it and things. But as it's interesting because he sees the, because obviously in our culture one of the archetypal examples of that is Jesus dying and rising. But he's saying that the thing that the story of Jesus does is exposes the violence as unrighteous, Jesus being the innocent victim, and so it unmasks the evil of the whole idea of sacrifice, is his point of view, helping to put an end to it. But this seems to me to be operating in a similar kind of way, because you've got a child, an innocent, and it's kind of showing up the ugliness of the idea, as it were.
Yeah. What I found interesting just watching it now is normally it's people out there who are expendable.
Hmm.
Whereas this time they've kind of stopped killing the expendable people and then actually killed somebody that you actually have some affinity towards.
These are great children screaming. She's particularly good.
I think she loves doing that.
There's a few kids who just seem to have a mouth that's so inhumanly large. It's unbelievable.
Like my James.
Like you, exactly like yours. So
is
doing the action right now.
Abnormally wide.
That is true.
It's just a big mouth for them.
Hey.
This kid's...
Yeah,
or dancing or something.
It is just really uncomfortable.
I like the way he leads quite well. Similar way the old geezer died. And then, as I expected, we have no explanation of why he can smell things, or if it was just him being crazy.
Yeah.
I knew they wouldn't explain that.
I was a little bit disappointed, because nothing has actually happened to him to make him able to smell things. It's just that he seemed to have that talent. Going back to the 4-5-6, there was a Charlie Brooker's new programme you've been watching, had a fantastic talk about the wonderful nature of the 4-5-6's negotiation technique, which is just you shout at the people you're negotiating with and then throw up all over everything, and how that should be used more.
Do we have a report?
And then particularly the scene where Frobisher says that he doesn't understand, and they say back to him, we don't understand! And echo him in a comedy accent, which again is a fantastic negotiating technique, one that we could all learn a lot from.
I think so. And they've gone.
Brilliant.
So what do we reckon would have been a better ending? Because I think we're all pretty much agreed it was pretty lame.
I think it could have worked.
I like
if
that
it
that's
was
totally clean. That yeah, there's no like slime or blood or anything.
Mm-hmm. But in the general ending of
if it had been set up better, so it had arisen more from what had gone before, and it had taken them a bit, hadn't come quite so much out of nowhere. Oh yes, we can do this type thing, then I think it could have worked better than it did.
If there'd been a bit of a lead up to it, it would have been absolutely fine. The soldiers, by the way, who were planning on taking away the children, I don't think they would just have stopped because the kids screamed. I think that they would have carried on until they had orders saying they shouldn't.
Mm.
You know, they'd still be collecting the kids. As far as they know, the orders still stand.
And you do have here the trope of the hero becoming that which he fights against.
Yeah.
Like you get to some extent this very dark idea of the deconstruction of the hero, like in The Dark Knight and so on.
But on the ending, I would have been tempted, although it would mess him up if he wanted to do a fourth season, to have actually let them take 10% and then see what happened afterwards. But then that would just go in obvious political territory, which they may and may not want to have gone into. But I thought that could have worked. The way it was set up, I think it would be more satisfying the way they led into it. He tried, but then failed. But as we get, he becomes an incredibly cynical Prime Minister who says he's lucky.
I don't know exactly what happened here.
Lucky with the Americans. General Peterson charged without ratification from the United Nations. We can say that today's events were in American hands.
Which might explain why he was willing to let the American guy be giving the orders so that he could... It gave him deniability.
In which case, you might like to know.
Yes, but I think it does make some sense, but the way in which it was filmed and his reactions at the time didn't seem to be consistent with that amount of calculating.
I like this, the reveal as well, that...
We might be linking to this because you have quite a lot of lingering shots of her with the...
With just watching face. People, yeah.
I can hardly feel them, sir.
His expression of, just, you know, I hate secretaries. Yeah.
Who's it? Who's the Prime Minister? What's he called?
Mr. Evil?
Dr. Evil.
His name in the story is Brian Greene. I don't know the actor.
No.
You wouldn't dare. I can have you arrested.
I don't think so.
It's casual.
This seems a bit odd because she's not exactly going to come out of it smelling of roses. Oh, yes, that's...
Who's killed the chav kids? Mine. Oh.
Well, they're only going to lose 10% of the electoral vote. The other 90% are going to be well impressed.
I can see that.
This is a government that will make the hard decisions. But here she is. She's got her smile back. Oh, no, it's faded. Is it there?
No,
it's still a little bit there.
I love Nick Briggs in the previous episode about how to spin everything.
Yeah.
Perfectly well.
It was nice to see Nick Briggs get a role.
I was very happy to see it. I was like, it's Nick! Hello, Nick!
Nick Briggs does all the voices of the Daleks and Cybermen and so on.
And is pretty much head of Big Finish now with James Ellery. And he's a great guy.
Swithin's personal friend.
Well, I won't go that far. He's not Barney, but... I think things might have ended there, just with that shot of Jack walking and fading.
But we get this 6 months later epilogue, which is the I'm off to be in Doctor Who epilogue.
Yeah. I missed the 6 months later, so I was very confused about why Gwen had suddenly grown a belly.
Maybe she's on a new diet.
Maybe.
Waiting for 4,000, she's been talking to Cartman.
I do think there's potential in the idea of Gwen being left to rebuild Torchwood.
By herself.
Yeah. It's having to deal with that.
Do you reckon it would be better back in Cardiff? I'd expect they would try to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because although from the rumours I've heard, it does. The rumour going round is that the hub set has been taken down to make room for a bigger TARDIS set for Series 5.
We've heard of rumours of a multi-level TARDIS, haven't we?
Mm. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. Doctor Who starts filming next week.
This week? Right.
Yeah, someone on Gallifrey Base bumped into Matt Smith down in the bay. Been to Tesco's apparently, was carrying a Tesco's grip then, but stopped and got a picture of him and autograph, and he mentioned that they were starting filming Series 5 next week.
Ah, see, Matt Smith at this point will still like this, up until for another few months, and then we'll get really annoyed.
Well, I would imagine until next week when it starts filming.
And everyone's there.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Go, have you not got jobs?
No! It's you, Matt Smith!
You're right,
we love you!
Poor guy.
Yeah.
Cold fusion.
Is that it? Is the thing that's glowing?
It's called fusion. It's a solution to all our energy problems. Or is it?
He's hitching a lift with his...
Yeah. As long as he's got a towel.
We haven't seen that for ages.
That's a big teleport plot device thing.
Didn't he have an empty child?
Well, his they used it quite a fair bit in Last of the Time Lords and stuff.
Oh, yes.
He used it in his fight with his evil brother. It was used there.
His evil what?
He had an evil brother. You missed all that.
I think this is quite good that I did. All times, all my fault. Oh, it's
that whole thing about the 21st century being when it all happens and Earth needing to be ready. Jack's given up on that.
They can stew in their own juices.
Yeah, those sleeper agents that are already on Earth, and you know the invasion that's happening right now. Presumably, that's been sorted out in the previous 6 months.
Off camera, obviously. Off the record. So this Jack saying, all these people die in response because of me, reminds me a little bit of Davros's chiding of the Doctor in Journey's End.
Mm. And I think they seem to be playing up in the specials the Doctor's guilt at the moment with him not taking Christine as a companion and so on. And so that seems to be part of the where the specials are going, the Doctor... And presumably Jack, who we know is going to be in the finale at some point, coming to terms with that to some extent.
When's the new Sarah Jane series out?
In the autumn, not sure exactly.
Is it going to try and tie in for the finale as well, or is that trying to separate itself?
I don't know, because...
The Doctor was a cameo, so I thought it might be another...
Yeah, he's properly in it. Yes, and Sarah Jane and Luke, I think most of the supporting cast are getting some kind of cameo in the finale.
Is Mickey gonna turn up?
It's gonna be the biggest one ever.
Again?
Yeah.
It's like
the world's first universe tour.
This like, time
it's not just the multiverse. But
yeah, it's what's bigger than the multiverse? It's the omniverse.
It's the omniverse, which is not just the omniverse from the Doctor Who fiction, but every other fiction as well, including reality.
Yeah.
So if the Doctor doesn't save us, then we'll actually be destroyed in some kind of better fictional super thing.
Yeah, there's not really much you can go bigger than the multiverse, though, is there?
The destruction of reality itself.
Very clever, right?
Well, there you are. That's Torchwood. The end.
Is it
Children of Earth?
Will they do a full series? And if so, what will they do?
I think right now I'm going to put it out there that I have all the plots that you'd need for season 4 in comic book format. So if anyone who's listening wants to, you know, have me writing a Torchwood comic book, give me a ring.
The email address is on the website.
Yeah. So it is. I tell you what, it's brilliant.
Don't call them; they'll call you. Yeah. I certainly think that there's ways in which they could develop it, having Gwen rebuilding Torchwood. I think you might want to do something different from alien invasion type threat. I mean, this wasn't an invasion as such, it was a more bullying Danegeld type thing. But I think you'd want to take a different angle on it, maybe something time travel based, some kind of time disturbance or type idea, and explore something along those lines, maybe.
My idea is a police procedural, but cross dimensions, so, you know, drug smuggling from another dimension.
You said that before. Yeah, that could be quite cool.
I think that this is the way they should have gone.
We've already done drugs, though, haven't we?
Yeah, but like kind of that thing, like, you know, do it more like kind of they've got to investigate what's going on, but you know, it can be across dimensions, or even like kind of let's have, oh, if the rift is such a threat, let's have preemptive strikes on the rift itself, trying to shut it down on all of the places it goes to.
Well, okay, a bit kind of Stargate-esque.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, kind of sending people through to try and shut it down on the other side.
I think sending people through the rift, sort of using it for exploration, would be interesting, sort of being more active in it. It's a bit Stargate, but if they played it more in a, in the sort of grittier
way, like
this, sort of, rather than an adult version of Doctor Who, a sort of adult version of Stargate, as it were.
And then what they should do is they should make the pterodactyl intelligent and bring it back as an actual character. I'm not kidding, like, the pterodactyl, the assassin lady, and Gwen, like, as a team, that would be amazing. an intelligent weevil as well.
We go from talking about making it a serious adult thing to having an intelligent pterodactyl on the team in the space of a... I'm not sure you're quite getting this serious and grown-up idea, James.
Yeah, that's not been a problem for Torchwood before now, so, you know, suddenly they have one successful season and they get heirs. They think that they can't have a pterodactyl. I've read, there's a book coming out by a guy called Steve Cole called Z-Rex. Now, it's brilliant idea. They resurrect a T-Rex, but they give it opposable thumbs and the ability to tie knots, wings, the ability to talk, and kung fu skills that is picked up from a video game. Now, that is what I want. A pterodactyl with that kind of skill. Like, it's sticking, you know, Tosh's brain or something. Make it Tosh, but she's now a pterodactyl. Well, amazing!
Something they could do if they were doing cross-dimensional type things would be to have
Full
parallel versions of...
This is what I'm hoping for from the movie, that they're going to have, like, kind of Torchwood, but, like, bring all of the start of Torchwood back. But with, like, kind of their evil
Yanto, Tosh, Owen versus...
Or, you know, some, or them from the past or something, or, you know, a future version where Tosh has been resurrected and is now the head of Torchwood herself and has an eye patch and a katana. Yeah, that is exactly what I want.
This is
possibly that you know me a little bit too well, Kevin. The one rule of going to the future, if there's been, you know, some kind of apocalypse, is that you've got to have a character with an eye patch. It's the only way to show that they're dark and gritty, that they've lost an eye. In fact, you don't even need to get them to lose an eye, just make sure they've got an eye patch.
See tie in Battlestar
Galactica. It was the one problem that I had with Martha in when they did the 1 year later, and she'd, you know, survived the destruction of Japan and everything, but didn't have a scratch on her. If she'd come out with an eye patch on, it would have been brilliant.
Which could have been magicked away by the
exactly, yeah,
she could, light and reset button.
But on
Torture
of the Week, it was good. I think the question is, will they want to finish in a normal, like, 13 episode season? Or will they try and do another event? Now, the thing is, they probably thought of this idea before they struck on the idea of doing a 5 episode event story.
Yeah.
So the problem is, do they try and stick with the same format and then try and get something to fit it? Because I'd be surprised if they could come up with anything as good as this off the back of trying to make it fit into a 5 day event story rather than thinking, we've got an idea, let's try and fit the format to the idea.
I think the only thing they can do is the sleeper agent stuff, which is a genuinely good idea that they never really developed, which was that you didn't see that one, probably, did you?
You could do cross-dimensional sleepers.
Yeah, well, the basis of this was that they'd just been sending sleeper agents to Earth for years, and this was, you know, the culmination of everything Jack had been afraid of, and it was all tying into Jack's backstory that these were the evil characters, but that there were people on Earth who didn't know that they were aliens, but were triggered, and that they accidentally triggered this cell. And it was very, very good.
It was written by James Moran, who...
But it ended with the final sleeper saying, you're too late, we're already here, and was then never mentioned again.
See, that could tie in very well, your multidimensional thing. It's like, could it give another coherence to the series? The early series in Torchwood didn't really have a coherent whole. They seemed to be very much standalone, without any
mixed
threads.
Yeah, now imagine that they find a way through to go through the rift to take out, like, kind of the command centre of that invading sleeper agent army. So they have to leave half of the Torchwood team behind to take out the sleepers, and the other half jumps through to take out the command. So it's, you know, a split world, split dimension, split reality war going on.
As a story.
Yeah, it'd be really good.
But anyway, shall we draw things to a close?
Yeah, I think so.
So concluding thoughts, Swithin?
It was good.
Wow. this is high praise indeed from Swithin.
Swithin never likes anything.
I mean, even Lawrence Miles likes it.
Lawrence liked it. Like,
infamous blogger, for those of you who follow such things. Yes, Lawrence Miles has been quite critical of Doctor Who recently. I think he liked series one of the new series, and his, like, odd episode here and there since then, but he was quite critical of series four. But and of Russell T Davies, and of Torchwood, but even he liked this. Any concluding comments?
A fitting finale and a strong start point for a reboot.
Yeah, I think it does seem to be trying to reposition it and to reinvent itself, and I think successfully. And if they bring it back for a fourth series, I would be interested in seeing where it goes from here. Good work. I think the ending could have been handled better, but it did just about hold together. At the end, I think it mostly worked.
It had enough momentum by that point that it crossed the line as a good, carried
you along with it, even though, if you stop to think about it, you're like, wait, what? There's quite a bit of
fridge logic.
Slightly more elaboration for me. First two episodes were kind of okay. I really like episode 3, it's brilliant. Momentum, fantastic from that. Carrying over into the fourth political stuff in episode 4 on Thursday. The ending was drawn out too much, and the ending was kind of okay. But the momentum it built up from Wednesday onwards was excellent. I mean, thematic depth hasn't got the most. It's got something there. It's not massively, but the momentum it brings with it and the tension, the excitement, you know, is really, really good. So, I think
there are some interesting things it's probably saying about heroism and sort of Russell C. Davies is quite dark. I think the froth with which he packages a lot of his ideas sometimes masks that, but with things like Midnight and this, you can really see he has got quite a cynical view of human nature, and I think it's it is quite interesting some of the things he has to say there. But yeah, I do think it was perhaps a bit too simplistic along class lines, sort of working class good, politicians and middle class is bad. But yeah, I think it was good drama. It was interesting. It was different and it was bold. I hope it comes back.
I will watch it when it does.
And that is high praise indeed from us here at Podcast Impossible Things. We're going to leave you now, I think, with those thoughts that, yeah, if it returns...
The world has been saved because some guy sacrificed his friends.
A happy ending or... that's all, folks.
Torchwood!
Right, I think we're a bit too high for now. Too much coffee.
Bye.